Okay, we'll first take a minute or two just to review the Gemara that we learned last week. And what I would really like to do in this shiur is to apply it to the halakha lemaisa, that we should be able to apply, you know, these concepts that we learned. And without getting involved in any of the deep lumdis, just to repeat the basic story we said last week. The story the Gemara told us in Kedushin Daf Nun Tes last week was that Rev Gidl was looking to buy a property. And as Rev Gidl was searching for that property, Rev Acha went to the seller and he purchased the property. Rev Gidl went and he complained to his Rebbe, who complained to Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. And Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha said, wait till he comes to me for Yontif and I'll have a word with him and I'll set the record straight. So the Gemara tells us that at that point, Rev Gidl went and he said to Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha went and he said to Rav Acha, he said, what is the halacha? If a person is a ani mahapech b'charara, what is the halacha? So what did he respond to him? He said, he's considered a rasha. To which Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha said, if that's the case, why did you yourself grab away a property that Rev Gidl was about to buy? So the Gemara tells us that he said, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware about it, that he was trying to buy the property. And Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha said to him, very good, if that's the case, return the property now to Rav Gidl. So Rav Acha said, I'm very sorry, I can't return the piece of property. And the reason was because he said that the first property that a person buys, it is not appropriate to sell it. And the reason is because it's not a good siman, that the first property that a person purchases, he should actually keep. You know, just as a small side note, I found a tshuva this week from the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Ozna, where Rav Ozna writes that he's a little bit surprised that this concept that a person shouldn't sell the first piece of property that he's bought, we don't see it not in the Rambam and not in the Shulchan Aruch. And why is that? So he says that it's very likely that we should keep it because the Gemara says that the first property that a person buys, he should not sell. He says, however, if a person bought it with the intention to sell it, then he's allowed to sell it. So therefore, that would be the answer today. People buy starter homes. They can't afford a regular home right away. The answer would seem to be that they bought it with the intention to sell it. He brings another point there. He says that if a person has a property and he sells it because he wants to buy another property in Eretz Yisrael, he says that's also allowed because that's considered a upgrade. But the truth is that it seems to be from the tshuva, and I haven't found anybody that says differently, that a regular person that buys a property, if it's the first property that a person buys, you should really try to keep it. But to get back to the story, so Rav Acha said to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, I'm very sorry, I cannot go and take the property and return it or sell it now to Rav Gidl because it's the first property that I owned. To which, at that point, he said, but on the other hand, Rav Acha said, if you would like, I'll give it to him as a matana. Rav Gidl refused to accept it because sonei matanot yichye, he didn't want to actually live there. Rav Acha, on the other hand, said, I won't live there because I, in essence, was a mahapech b'charara, so he refused to live there. And at the end, it became a Beit Midrash, and the Gemara says that it was called Ara de Rabbanan. Right? That's the Gemara we learned in Kedushin Nun Tes last week. Now, Tosfot asked an interesting question, and Tosfot asked that what's the difference? We had a Gemara in Bava Metzia. What does it say there? It says that if a person sees a Metziah, right? Remember we discussed, you see a watch on the floor, and you're about to pick up the watch. So what happens? And another person runs by right behind you, and he grabs the watch before you can actually pick it up, right? Ro'es HaMetziah, right? V'nofel aleo, oishe pirish, piras talisa yaleo, ibo acha v'notlo, right? So the Gemara says it's okay, and it belongs to the second person that grabbed it. That was the question that Tosfot asks. And also there's a Mishnah in Masechtas Peah, where the Mishnah says a similar thing, that a person gathers all his peah in a certain place, and then another person comes and grabs it away. It seems like he's allowed to grab it away. So that is what the question Tosfot asks. So Tosfot disagrees with Rashi, and disagrees with the Ramban. Rashi and the Ramban said that Oni Mahapech B'charara applies even to mitziyah, something that you found. According to Tosfot, and it's very important because we'll see soon that the Mechaber, the Bet Yosef, paskins like Rashi and like the Ramban, that Oni Mahapach Bechara always applies, even applies to the case when it was a mitziyah. The Rama will paskin according to Tosfot, not like, what's that?
You know. Maybe one thing's hefker, one thing's not.
Say that again, I'm sorry?
By those other cases, they're hefker.
Right.
And by the field, it's not a hefker. By the case of the field, it's not hefker.
By the case of?
The guy who bought the field.
Right. So but what's worse? By the field, by a purchase or a lease, we clearly see there's a concept.
There's more of a problem there than there is by the hefker. By the hefker, no one owns it.
Okay, so that's why Tosfot says exactly that point that you just mentioned. He disagrees with Rashi and with the Ramban that says that Oni Mahapech always exists, and the Tosfot says that it only applies to a purchase, a sale, a lease, a rental. That's what Tosfot says. But a mitziyah, it does not apply to. Hefker, it does not apply to. That is what Tosfot says. Now, what is the reasoning of the Tosfot? Now, we spent a lot of time reading it last week, and we explained. Tosfot always comes back to one point. What is the concept of the Oni Hamahapich Becharara? The concept is a very simple concept. The concept is, why are you going and taking business that another person is about to get that you can get somewhere else? Right? If you can get the business elsewhere, a person worked on a deal. So as the person's about to close on the deal, what do? You go and you grab the deal away. Right? You spent your time, you invested your time into trying to sell a mortgage, and as soon as the mortgage is about to close, so somebody else comes and he says, okay, now it's my...
Never happened.
To you it never happened, but I know other people tell me it has happened to them. So as you're about to close, another person comes and he grabs away the deal. So what do you have to grab away the deal that another person invested his time? He was the oni, he was mahapech, he worked on it and tried to get his cookie, his wafer. Why do you need to have his deal? Go do business elsewhere. There are other people you can sell mortgages to. But when it comes to hefker or the mitziyah, what happens? If you're not going to get this specific property, what's going to happen? You can forget about it. You're not going to get it elsewhere, right? And it's done, right? Remember we discussed the case in Baba Basra with the Mitzidat Hadag. What was the point over there? The point was that Marchikin Kimelo Mitzidat Miritzat Hadag, which was a parsa. You don't have to go and take the same fish the other person is getting. Go catch fish elsewhere. So the bottom line is, the Chiddush of Tosfot is that when is there a case of Oni Mahapech in business? Why? Why do you have to take what another person was matriach to get for himself? On the other hand, if the situation is that you can't get it elsewhere, so then there's no such thing as a Oni Mahapech Becharara. That was what the Chiddush of Tosfot was. Now, just before we even start to apply the Halakha, let's go back and reflect and try to understand Rashi and the Ramban that disagree with Tosfot, and let's try to understand what are they saying. The bottom line is that there is a clear, they said that it applies, Oni Mahapech Becharara applies even to Hefker. We have a clear Mishnah in Gemara in Bava Masechta Daf Yud and a Mishnah in Peah that says clearly that you do that when it comes to let's take the first case. The first case, the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara tells us that if a person went and he's about to pick up a Metzia and another person grabs away the Metzia, so who does it belong to? The person that grabbed it. So you see clearly that there is no Oni Mahapech by Metzia, right? Like Tosfot asked, and therefore Tosfot disagreed with Rashi. So the Bet Yosef asks this question in Simon Resh Lamed Zayin, and the Bet Yosef answers that Bava Metzia is a Mesechta, which is a bottom line halacha for Kinyonim, which means the fact of life is, this is what happened, this was the story, who does it belong to? Does it mean it's ethical? No, it's not necessarily ethical. The sugya of Oni Mahapech Becharora is telling us, is it the appropriate thing to do or the inappropriate thing to do? So therefore the Bet Yosef explains as follows. When the Gemara told us in Bava Metzia Daf Yud that if you see a person's about to pick up a Metzia, and what did you do? You grabbed it, so it belongs to you. The Gemara is telling us the bottom line, who does it actually belong to. But the Ramban and Rashi say it's still the wrong thing to do. You have no right to do it. You're still going to be over on Imahapach, right? That's how the Ramban learns. Now, the second case, the case of Peah. When a person went and he gathered all the Peah, and after he gathered all the Peah, another person goes and he grabs it away and he takes it for himself. So how are you allowed to take the Peah that a person started to gather for himself? And that should really be even a bit worse. And that should be because he really started to gather it. And that should be a clear raya that you don't say, Oni Mahapech Becharara by Peah. So the Bach explains the answer to that question. And the Bach says that Peah is a bit different, because it's very hard to say that Peah, at any point, that it starts to belong to you. And why is that? Because Peah is the type of money that the Torah was zochse to the aniyim, which means the Peah by definition belongs to everybody. The Chasam Sofer and that Shuv and Siman Ayin Tes brings down that that is the way the Yishalmi learns the concept of Peah. But not until you actually see, the person was just shuffling it. If you actually lifted it, then you're right. But if he was just simply pushing it into a corner and sort of gathering and saying, okay, this corner is going to be mine, and he's eyeing that corner and he's starting to push it together, not. But if you actually lifted it, then you're 100% correct. Then there's a kinyan hagbah, then you're 100% correct. The Bach says another point, which is a very fascinating point. Also, in Siman Reish Lamed Zayin, the Bach says that Peah is a little bit different. And why is that? Because he says, let's try to analyze, is Peah a typical case of Hefka? He says, no. By Peah, all the Aniyim are running after the Hefka. So since all the Aniyim are running after the Hefka, everybody's in the same playing field, because everybody's searching. It's like it's a new concept of a Hefka, so it's hard to compare. But Al Kaponim, just to go back to our issue, we have a disagreement between Rashi and the Ramban, who say that Oni Mahapach applies even by Mitziyah and Hefka. We have the opinion of Tosfot that says that Oni Mahapach only applies to a purchase, a sale, a business, right? A rental, a lease, something of that sort. It does not apply to Hefka. So now, let's take a look at the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch, Reish Lamed Zayin, Hamachse Achedova Liknoisoi, a person that's trying to purchase an item, or he's trying to rent this item, regardless if it's property, and somebody else comes, Sif Aleph, right? Reish Lamed Zayin Sif Aleph. And another person comes, and he purchases the item, Nikra, he's called Rasha a Russia. V'hu adin, and similarly, l'rotze l'haski atzmai etzel achar, a person that's trying to get a job by another person. And what does another person do? He goes and he rents himself to this boss to get that job. Okay, that is the introduction, and that's obviously the opinion of that is the first opinion the Mechaber brings down. Now the Mechaber says, V'yesh oymen, some say, they disagree, that it's not by every item, she'im bo liskois behefker, if it's a situation of hefker. Oy mekabel matana me'acha, ibo acha, and somebody else comes. V'kodmoy, einin nekra rasha, kiven she'ena dova, hamotzi loy b'mokoyim, achar. So now, what does the Mechaber say? That there is a second opinion, and the second opinion is that if you have a situation where you can't get the item elsewhere, like in business, but rather it's Hefker or Metzia, so then you're not going to say the concept of Oni Mahapech Becharara, right? And we'll see now there's a disagreement between the Ramah and the Mechaber, how we actually rule on this question. Okay, now we'll get to the ruling on this question in a couple of seconds, but before we continue, let's discuss as follows. Let's say a person was Mahapech Becharara, right? And a person went and he did steal an account that belonged to another person. So what's the next thing that happens? Can you go, we started to discuss this last week, can you go after the person went and he stole an account that should have belonged to you, in the case where it's clearly illegal, let's say in business. So do you have the ability at this point to grab back the account to yourself? Which means, can you go to the Beit Din and force the Beit Din? The Beit Din will force them to give back the account. Go ahead.
What's considered stealing an account?
Good question. At what point do you consider that the account is being stolen? That's a very, very good point. In other words, there has to be a certain point where we'll call it the negotiation stage, and there'll have to be a certain point where we'll consider it ani mahapech b'chara, because the fact is people are always negotiating. So at what point is it considered that you stole the account? Okay, that's a very, very important question. We did not discuss that question at all last week, and I'll tell you what, we'll discuss it now. So instead of discussing what we were about to discuss, we're going to skip down a couple of lines, and I want to read to you, you're going to look at the Ramah. Okay? Take a look at the Ramah, where it says, V'chol zeh. That's towards the end of Sif Aleph. Take a look, V'chol zeh. Do you see where that Ramah is towards the end of Sif Aleph? V'chol zeh loy mairi ele kishekvar pasku hadomim shebeneim. So the Ramah comes, and the Ramah says the following point, and this is extremely towards the end of the Ramah in Sif Aleph. This, you see where it says V'ayin le'el simen kuf nun vav sifhei, and then V'chol zeh, by the square tests in the Ramah. Do you see that? So let me see which copies do you have. V'chol zeh, do you see it? I have a different printing on the Shulchan Aruch than you do. On the second page,
third page.
You got it? Now, look at the Ramah says, to answer your question. This whole discussion of the Ani Mahapach only applies kishekvar posku adomim shebeneim, when there was an agreement of the price in between the two of them. Which means, it was not in the stage of negotiating, because as long as it's negotiating, the Ramah says, anybody can come in and take part of the deal. It has to be that there was a agreement, which means they were negotiating for a while and they agreed that let's say the case of the home, right, which the Gemara says clearly is oni mahapach, they agreed that they're going to sell the house for $800,000, for argument's sake. But as long as they were negotiating, and one said 900, one said 700, and 850, and 750, that's not considered a problem, and any person can jump in and take the home away. It's no problem. The ein mechisorin. Now, extremely important to read this lashon of the Ramah. V'chein mechisorim, there's nothing lacking. Ela hakinyan, just to actually go and to execute that the kinyan should actually happen. Avol, but im mechusorin adain hapsika, which means they never actually agreed on the terms of the price. Shehamocher rotze bekach. The seller says, I want this to be the price. The buyer wants to get it for cheaper, right? Mutar la'acha leknoto, right? There's no problem. Another person is allowed to jump in. So now let's try to apply this to answer your question, which means that the concept of oni mahapech b'charor exists when there's an agreement between the two parties. But as long as there's no agreement between the two parties, there is no problem of oni mahapech b'charor. So according to that, the truth is, it has to be that the deal's about to close, and that's when you grab the deal away.
Each deal is on his own. Maybe if somebody has a steady customer and he sells them on a steady basis.
Oh, so now that's you have to come the last 4 or 5 weeks. we had a discussion that there's something called the Marufia. And in Marufia, we discussed that there are times where you have a customer that you work with him to the extent where he becomes your exclusive customer. It has to be that it's really your exclusive customer. The Lashon of Marufia is from Ya'arfu Tal, which means it's like Tal, it's definitely coming in your direction. There, you don't have a right to take away the account ever. That's we had a Tshuva in the Chavos Yoyer, and I'm sorry if on that. What? Is any customer. Well, we said clearly that as long as a person has many, many people who are giving him insurance quotes and many people who are selling mortgages to him and he gives the quotes out to 3-4 people, then there's no exclusive and then anybody's allowed to go and take the account. So we said today it's a very rare thing to happen. We said, I mentioned after the Shiur a few cases that I knew of that there was a case of Marufia, but in general that doesn't happen. But in this Shiur of Oni Mahapach B'Charara, we are discussing specifically a deal that was already negotiated between two parties. It's about to close. The only thing which didn't happen yet is that it has not formally been closed. They didn't shake hands, they didn't make a kinyan, they didn't put it into writing, but there is a verbal agreement between the two parties. So that, less than that, There's no Oni Mahapach. Now, don't get so excited, because the Petrei Tshuva brings down that the Minhag in the world is to be more Machmir than that. And that is that there are stages in negotiation that you can't go and disrupt the person's deal. So let me show you what those stages are. Now take a look at the Petrei Tshuva, and that's Sif Katan Gimel. Okay, 3. Okay, take a look. You see the Petrei Tshuva. Look what he says. Aval im mechusarin mutal achal leknoto. Ayin beprisha. Look at the prisha shekosav that he writes. Ato, and presently the minhag is nohagin lepsok that we paskin kiyotze baze shu hasagat gevul. It's interesting. He comes up with a new term because he can't call it ani mahapech becharara because the Gemara and the Tosfot already defined what ani mahapech is. And remember, I already discussed a tshuva in the Mashal that in Simen Pei Tes that hasagat gevul is a borrowed term, because true hasagat gevul is only by property and it's only in Eretz Yisrael, so it doesn't really exist that you can ever have a true case of hasagat gevul. It doesn't really exist, but it's a borrowed term. Whenever you're infringing on another person's business in a way that you shouldn't be, they call that hasagat gevul, but it really means oni mahapech ilachoir nira lechalik. So now he suddenly brings down that it's a minhag that once two people are negotiating, you can't jump into their negotiations. Now, is that correct? So the Petrei Tshuva brings down that it depends. What does it depend on? V'lechoy unir l'chalek t'cheshaba echad l'knot dava me'asheni im chulakim b'pisik hadamim ze omeh, right? Ze omeh kecheu b'shisha v'ze omeh t'nei, right? Dalet, right? For example, 4 im es askim b'pisuko is a new concept which is mentioned in the Petrei Tshuva, and it's an in-between, and the story is as follows. There are two types of ways that people negotiate. One type of way that people negotiate is that you say, okay, I would like to purchase your house. Okay, I would like to sell to you. No problem. How much do you want? 800. No. 700. No. Right? 790. No. Right? 710. Back and forth. It's quite clear from the style of the negotiation that if a third party won't get involved, the sale's going to go through. Which means when you see two people sit down, the intention is to work it out, and they just simply have to come up with a number, and everybody feels, look, I want to get a better deal. I want to get another $10,000. He wants to get another $10,000, but you're going to somehow come up with the terms to work it out. That clearly will be a case of Oni Mahapech Becharara. He doesn't want to call it that. He wants to call it Hasagat Gevul, but you know what he means. He really means Hasagat Gevul of Oni Mahapech. But one second. When you have a situation where two people are negotiating, and the negotiation is as follows. Okay, 1 million. No, 7, 9. 750. You know what? It's not for now. I'll talk to you another time. As an hour, I'm not interested. I see we're not talking, we're not on the same page. And he walks away. And then they come back. Those types of negotiations, that if you dare, you may jump in. So you understand? So suddenly the Petrei Tshuva is saying that even though the Ramah said that in order to jump in and take another person's deal, it has to be in a situation, once it has to be Pisik Damim, came the preacher, and the preacher says, no, you can't get involved in another two people's negotiations. And suddenly the Petrei Tshuva bring down that there is a third opinion. And the opinion that we accept is that you have to evaluate the style of the negotiation. If the style of the negotiation is a negotiation which will eventually conclude, however, everybody's trying to still, you know, fine-tune and get another few dollars into his own pocket, there you may not get involved, which means serious negotiations. If on the other hand the two parties are not truthfully serious, but everybody's trying to say, hey, if I get a really good deal, I'll do it, and they walk away and they come back, those negotiations you are allowed to get involved.
Could it be the terms of the deal as well?
Excellent point. Comes the today's poskim, and today's poskim say that there are many cases, and this is in the contemporary halacha lemaisa, that there are many cases where there is an agreement on funds. The amount of money is totally agreed upon, and still it's not considered a pisik damim. For example, a lease that you negotiate. You negotiate a lease with a certain renter. And as you negotiate the deal with a certain renter, you agree that the price is going to be $20,000 a month in rent, right? You rent out a building. But there can be many terms. I mean, who is responsible for maintenance and who's responsible for heat, right? Is it a triple net deal, right? You have all kind of discussions of how to agree, how to structure the deal. So there, even if you have a pisik damim on the amount of funds, it's nothing, right? Why is it nothing? Because the money doesn't mean anything. So you really have to evaluate each case individually. And what's that? Huh? Because there's no agreement. In other words, they agreed that I'm going to sell to you for $1 million, but what am I selling to you for $1 million? So there's no agreement. Right? If there's an agreement and it's something which is clear and obvious, so there you have a concept of pisik damim. But if you have a situation where something remains ambiguous and there are many ways to structure the deal, so even if there is a financial agreement, it means nothing because there are so many other factors that will play a role and you have to consider all of those other factors. You understand? Those are the ways to deal with it. But that's basically the answer to your question. Oh, good. Yeah, the
another question.
Go ahead.
Let's say you have the first two parties, A and B.
Right.
Okay, they have the agreement. C comes in, swoops in, knocks up the whole deal.
Right.
Then no, C didn't have any agreement with A and B.
What do you mean? Again, A is negotiating
A
with
B. We're negotiating. They were
with each other. A is the seller and B is the buyer.
And then another guy.
Then C approaches A.
Swoops in. They have no agreement with
what
A.
Gave C the right to go to A?
I don't know. He came with a better price.
But he's a Rasha. If A and B are about to have a deal, so he's a Rasha. Now, there's a different question. What can you do now that it happened? What can you do to see? You tell him, "Oni ma'apech b'charara." Now, can you force him at this point that he should go and he should say, okay, since I went and I was ma'apech, that I need to go and give up the deal back to A, right? Can you do that or not? Right? What are you saying?
Is give up the deal or pay the damages also?
Well, paying the damages would be... It's very hard to say that you're obligated to pay damages by a case of onim ha'pech, because it's not bari hazeka. Every case that you pay damage, you need to have bari hazeka, that it's guaranteed. I explained, the hardest thing to do, you'll never be able to collect in a discussion where you clearly, the Beit Din ruled that you have hasagat gavul. A person opened up a store next door to you, and he competed with you, and therefore he needs to close his store. So can you say the profits he earned that he's obligated to give it to you? Absolutely not. Because you don't know that a person would have come into your store. It's miniat revach, right? There's no bari hazeka, right? Here too, can I say clearly, fine, I did the wrong thing by getting involved in ruining your deal, but can I say clearly that the deal would have closed between A and B? Nobody can really say that. What's that? So then you can't collect damages. Damages has to be bari hazeka. If there's no bari hazeka, we said, you remember, we went a step further. When we learned the tshuva in the Ramah, where the Ramah discussed that there are cases in business that you set yourself up in a way where it's guaranteed you're going to get the profits, like the case of the Rambam with the Maram Padova, right? And that Mark Antonio Justinian between the... So there the Ramah said that in that case when he stole the business, it was bari hazeka. Bari Hazeka. But if it's less than Bari Hazeka, you won't be able to collect.
Is the paying followed by the verbal agreement or by the, when the deal is signed, that's when it's completed?
Well, when there's a verbal agreement, the most that can happen is, so you say that the person is over on Oni Mahapech Bechara. You can't say that the agreement can be upheld because the agreement is not yet an agreement that's upheld. You see, the truth is,
nothing's done.
So let me tell you. Bezat Hashem, next week I want to do the shiur in the reverse. And that is when you're in the middle of negotiating and you make a commitment that I'm going to do the deal with you. And then you find that you can do a better deal with somebody else. At what point you can back out. And that goes into the famous sugi in Bava Metzia, in Perek HaZahav, right? From Daf Memhei through the Memtes, the four blat, and those four blat discuss, there is the Mishepora, and there's the Anshei Amona, and there's Ein Ruach HaChomem Noichemeno, right? The Gemara breaks it into three categories. There's three levels of backing out, right? Simon Reish Zayin and Choshe Mishpat discusses that at great length, and that is to back out of a deal after you committed yourself to a deal, right? Here we're saying a different discussion. Here we're saying you didn't yet give a commitment. We're not discussing get at this point, the commitment. Here we're discussing the person feels he's gonna get a deal, and you're going and you're taking away the deal from your friend. Now, I want to tell you, there happens to be a very interesting discussion in the Mashal. And the Mashal says that while it's in the negotiating stage and there's no commitment, even though we just said clearly in the Petchei Tshuva that if the deal is gonna happen, so then you're not allowed to go and steal the deal away, right? That's what we just learned in the Petchei Tshuva. However, let's say you would make the decision, the seller, before the deal is actually closed, and the seller says, you know, and before there's a verbal agreement on the deal, in this case that the Petchei Tshuva mentioned, the seller says, I want to go to a third party and I want to sell it to him. So nothing's going to stop the seller, because if the seller approaches you and says to you, give me another quote, so then he's allowed to do so. Nobody can stop the seller. The only mahapech b'charara stops another person from intervening and trying to grab a deal away from another person, but the person that's giving the deal can absolutely go to as many people as he wants. As a matter of fact, the Mashal writes of a story where a person went, and this is the Mashal in Siman Lamed Vov, with a beautiful lengthy tshuva on this topic, and the Mashal says that what happens if a person is a oni mahapech, what happens is a person is about to give another person a deal, is about to rent a property to him, right? It was sechirut or something of that sort, and then he goes quickly and he behind this person's back, he rents it to another person. So the person takes the, like you said, B takes C to the Torah, and he says to him, why did you grab the deal away from me? So C says, excuse me, A came after me, I didn't go after him. So then they go to the Beit Din, and A says, it's not true, I never went after C. So the Mashal says, he's not ani mahapech b'charara, and Beit Din can do nothing. Why? Because the maximum that happens here, it's a personal obligation that you did the wrong thing. That's all that can happen here. There's no, you're a Rasha, there's no obligations. And a person can say in himself, I am not a Rasha. There's nothing you can do to this person. That's what it boils down to. Okay, now, the big question, which is very, very important to discuss, and that is, what happens after a person is mahapech? Can you go afterwards, and we started to discuss this last week, can you go afterwards, can the Beit Din, after they rule that he's a Rasha, can they go and grab the deal away and give the deal back from C to A, like you mentioned? Okay, so let's take a look. There's a few beautiful Petrei Tshuvas over here. Let's take a look at Beis. Nikra Rasha. Okay, so first he has a discussion that he's called a Rasha, that's only Midrabanan, not Midaraisa. Fine, that's the first topic. Now let's see as follows. Okay, take a look in Petchei Tshuva Beis at the first dat by the Ayin Be'er Heitev, Sif Kutn Vuv. Maisha Kosav Arit Vehevi Mishem Rabbeinita. Okay. Kol makom sha'amru chachamim dinikra rasha mechayevim oto lahachzi hamekach. So he brings down that every time when the person is a rasha, you force him to return the mekach. V'hu zal cholek alav, and the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. And the Mashal also writes very strongly to disagree. And he says that even though the person is considered a rasha, it is only as a rasha for his own conscience. But you can't say he's called a rasha that he needs to go and he has an obligation to return the deal. What's that?
This is the hefker.
Again, right? This is according to, if you believe that a hefker is considered anima hapech, then that will apply. You know, the halachot will be the same. It's simply a question, do you view hefker also as anima hapech? That's going to be the
difference now? What does it make a difference?
What's bothering them is that it's called a rasha. Right. There are certain categories of who's called a rasha. Right. A rasha is a person that is over on isur of Torah. Right. There's not, you can't be a rasha on a drabanan. How do you, because that's called an avarian. Right? That's in Simon Lamed Aleph and Choshen Mishpat. And the true difference is, there's no real true difference. I mean, the smas bother that there's really no true difference. The only point is that you should know that he's pasula edut. And for Shua, you can't accept him. And once the person is...
there is such a concept of Rasha Darabana.
Yeah, that's what he brings down. That this Rasha is Rasha de Rabbanan. Now, the only question, the Chassam Sofer and the Marit, they're all bothered. Why is it called a Rasha? Rasha is only, you find in the Torah that the Loma Sakar Yech is considered a Rasha. So he says, because there's a Pasuk, which the Pasuk tells us in Masech Sanhedrin, that Vel Ishish Re'ei Loi Timei Zehayored L'Nechsei Chaveroi, right? And then the Pasuk continues, Tzidka HaTzadik Alav V'Rishat HaRasha Alav Tiyeh. So you see that he's called a Rasha. By definition, he's called a Rasha. So they're basing it on that Pasuk. But the concept of the Rasha is clearly a concept of a Rasha, the Rabbanan. And the answer will be that he's Pasula Eidot. That's exactly what's going to happen in this specific situation. Now, the Mashal says as follows. Now, we mentioned this last week. What is the proof? What is the proof that even though he's a Rasha, he's not obligated to return it, right? So we started to mention that. So take a look towards the end. The ayin, he says as follows. Okay, b'tshuvat chemdat Shlomo shehiske divrei mashal imasas binyamin, which we discussed last week. They went into different concepts, which I don't want to go into right now because they were complicated concepts. With even when this the masas binyamin and the mashal discussed something which I'm not going to get into in this shir again. That was that there are times when even if you're exempt of the rules of onim ha'peich because it's talking about hefker. However, there's a new concept which is mechadesh, which is called Tircha, right? I'm just, you remember that Masas Binyamin, which he says is a concept called Tircha, that once a person puts a tremendous amount of work into getting something, it belongs to him automatically. And the raya for that was a different topic, right? What was that Mishnah? The Ani Hamanakev Barosh Hazayas, right? Who sits on top of the olive tree and he bangs down all the olives, right? And then you go and you grab them from below. But the Mashal said that tircha is different because that is a tircha which is a, he writes the lashon, he says v'yesh lechalek ben tircha letircha, which means most tircha will not go into a category that just for the tircha you get the ownership. But if it's in a situation where a person worked so hard, where it's such a physical labor, right? The mashal says that a financial investment is not considered tircha, right? The archuvot and the later achronim that discuss people that would travel for business to the extent that they would put their lives at danger. You know, in the old days when people would travel for business, today too, some people, they put their lives in danger. So then the poskim say that tircha will be considered a tircha, which the tircha itself, removing from the discussion of oni mahapeh, it becomes like it's yours. But let's go away from that topic and let's concentrate again on the Mashal's question. After a person is an Oni Mahapech and he is already considered a Rasha, does he have the ability to go and extract the deal from the other person? So the Mashal says as follows. He says that V'hiskim imahem de'en bo din chazara. Right, so the Mashal and the Masas Binyamin and the Chem de Shloima all say that the bottom line is you can't take it away. Rak just Shemachrizin, you go into the shul. Sheasa Maisa Resha, you make a loud announcement in shul that he did a bad thing. Kedei lahachlimo, to embarrass him. Shelo yaseh kazos. The kasav the efshe yesh biyad bezin laansho. Right. To punish him, derech knas kadesh leyaseh kazos, avil hamekach kana legamri. But once you purchased it, that's it. It's too late, right? Remember, we mentioned last week that there is the Chassam Sofer quotes a right. What was the Mashal's proof? The Mashal's proof was because as follows. The Mashal says that since he. What was the proof that you can't actually go and remove the property from the other person? Because the Gemara tells us that Rev Gidl said to his Talmud, what did he say to him? He said to him, transfer the property. So what did he say? I can't give it away because it's a bad siman. So what did he say back to him? He had nothing to respond to him. If the case was that according to the halakha, you have an obligation to transfer the property, so then what would happen? He should technically transfer the property. So the answer is, it's not a obligation, but rather it's the right thing to do, and you're called a Rasha. That was the proof that the Mashal had. However, I mentioned that there's a Tshuva on the Sheiris Yosef, that the Sheiris Yosef writes that this could be that the reason why Rav Acha didn't have to give the property to Rav Gidl, what was the reason for that? Because he was did it b'shogeg. But if you were oni mahapech b'mezid, then you do have to go and give over the deal. However, according to just about most of the poskim that disagree, an oni mahapech never has to go and give over the property. That's the bottom line. Now, we mentioned something last week, which after the shiur, there were some said that they didn't understand it, and they had a hard time understanding it, but I see it's right here, and I want to mention it again. He says here as follows. Okay, 1 second. Oh, read this. 1 second. Okay, V'ayin Shem Oid. Here, Simon, take a look at this. You know, I mentioned last week, I wanted to show you, I saw this in a few places. Take a look at this. He said, Shekosav is elashoinai. Ilani is dati, yesh mokim sofik. There is a question. Hecha, dehoye mezid, in a case where a person did oni mahapech intentionally, af im machsir hamekach, even if afterwards he returns it, im misukin bazeh hamaisa resha she'oso. If the act of the rishis gets corrected. That's interesting, you have to read the Lashon well. Not if the act of the rishis ever can be corrected. If you go and you take another person's property before he's miyayish, and you take it with the intention of stealing it, so what happens? Over bikulon, you're over on everything. Even though after yish you return it, what happens? Matana ba'alma hu diyavlei. What happens? You went and you grabbed another person's chayfet when before he was miyayish, and what was your intention? To steal it. Now when you received it, you didn't receive it as stealing it. You went and you kept it afterwards. Now the person is miyayish, right? Person is miyayish. There's no real chiyuv to return it. So what happens? Now you decide you're doing tshuva. So what do? You return it. So you return it, but you don't clearly clean up the act of the offense of doing what? Of hashavat aveda. Right? So, or...
But it goes against the whole concept of tshuva.
It goes against the concept...
always understood.
Right. Now, how is it possible to actually go and correct an action, but you still, even after you correct the action, the action sort of still exists, right? It's interesting. I'm showing it to you. It's not. I just wanted to point this out to you. You see. Take a look. The ein b'chol shemish v'tzimereishin on test by hashavat aveda. The chol hecha de ein bo chazara ein ha'isim mesukin ba chazara im loy she'osa kein derech tshuva v'charata. Here's your answer. Okay. Now, if you did it derech tshuva v'charata, so you're right. But if a person, let's say a person went and he stole, and then they caught him for stealing, and he was embarrassed, and he returned it, so then the aver is off. But because the issur was to steal, b'heshem sekzela, right? But let's say a person went, and he was oni mahape, and then they pushed him to do tshuva, and he returned it, right? Or let's say a person stole a aveda before yish, and then there was yish, and then he returned it. Why? Because he was embarrassed of the situation. So what is the story? What will happen is, since it's not that one act clearly cleans up the other act, if you did it as tshuva v'charata, you have a kapara. If not. That's what he's saying. So you're 100% right. Tshuva v'charata will help anyways, because that will take care of every avera. But if you just returned it because you were embarrassed, because they came in shul, like we said, the sma said, and they made an announcement that the person was a mahapech, then in that type of case, there will not be a true kapara. What's that?
Because the status of the item is changed.
Because of the status, exactly. The status is that there are certain actions that wipe out certain actions. But if you have a situation where one action, thank you, doesn't clearly wipe out the second action, so then that's not going to be the situation. Thank you very much. Now, it's important to note just another few points. It's getting a little bit late, but I just want to mention another few points. And that is as follows. As I discussed, there's a disagreement between the Mechaber and the Ramah. According to the Mechaber, the psak seems to be, that Oni Mahapech applies even to Hefker Metzia. According to the Rama, it doesn't apply to Hefker Metzia, it only applies to a case of business, right? That was a disagreement between the Mechaba and the Rama. Comes the Rama and he says as follows, Va'afila l'svara zu, even according to that opinion that said that there is a problem of Oni Mahapech by Hefker, that's only when it's a fear deal. What does it mean it's a fear deal? You see, a person's about to pick up the Rolex watch that we discussed. And since the person's about to pick up the Rolex watch that we discussed, so you say to yourself, look, I'm not going to be able to get that anywhere else. So since I'm not going to be able to get that anywhere else, so why should he get it? I would rather have it. So you grab it away. Now, let's say you have a situation where it's really a unfair situation. So according to the Mechaber, that's still considered Oni Mahapech Mechara. Now, so the Rama says, but how about if you'll have a situation where the person that's about to pick up the watch is a very wealthy man, and the person that's about to grab the watch is a poor man. So what's going to be the story in that type of situation? So the Rama says, then there's no Oni Mahapech Mechara. Why is there no Oni Mahapech Mechara? Because the whole idea is that it should be fair, right? But on the other hand, why should we go and suddenly protect the rich man when he did not actually make a kinyan, doesn't actually belong to him yet? And what are you going to do? So you're going to say, no, that he should get it and not the poor man. So here it's not even fear that it should be that way. Just because he saw it first, what's that? Why not?
If it works one way, it should work the same way all along.
Again, does it really make... Let's analyze it. According to the... Let's try to truthfully to understand. According to the Rama's opinion, why is Oni Mahapech Becharora? That's Tosfot. It works with one simple understanding. And what's the understanding? The understanding is that go get your business elsewhere. But if it's an item that you can't get elsewhere, so then it doesn't even exist. Comes the Mechaber and the Ramban, and they're more machmir, let's call it, right? They're more machmir. What is their opinion? No, even in a case when you can get it somewhere else. Why? Because it's not fear. The other person's about to find it. But some cases, what do you mean it's not fear? This wealthy man has so many Rolexes in his collection, he's going to have another one. This poor man doesn't have any, so you're going to go and you're going to protect him that he should get another Rolex, right? And the truth is that there are many cases... Wait, one second, we'll have to go much deeper into this. Well, we'll have to elaborate 100%, huh? You don't like this concept, huh?
Concept, doesn't matter.
The truth is, it's very hard. Let's really try to understand. How do you truthfully understand this Ramban? The Ramban, which is the sheet of the Mechaber. How do you truthfully understand it? You have a person that finds something, so why can't I grab it away? Why not? The person didn't make a kinyan yet, why can't I grab it away? Why protect him? Protect me.
Item.
What's that?
Causing him to lose that
item. He doesn't have it yet. It's Hefker. It's Hefker. It belongs to nobody presently.
He just saw it first.
Huh?
He saw it first.
And seeing it first, what does that do? It doesn't do anything to you seeing it first. You have to think about it, you have to think about it objectively. The fact, so we're saying, no, it's still Oni Mahapech Becharora, the person found it. Let's be fair. But is it truthfully fair? He saw it a second before me. Again, we have to take this, for example, this one classic case where this is discussed. What is the most classic case where this is discussed? I would like to purchase a property. Right? I come to you, we negotiate a deal, you're ready to sell it to me. A day before you're ready to sell it to me, he suddenly shows up and he says to you, sell the property to me. So that would clearly be a concept of Oni Mahapech Becharora, right? Clearly, because it's Mekhi Memka, everybody will agree, right? Now, how about if he's the next door neighbor, he's the Metzrin? Now, technically speaking, he is protected because of Dina de Bametzra. But anybody that learns a Simon of Bametzra, which Bezrat Hashem will do one day, there are many exclusions when there's no Bametzra. I'll give a simple example, right? Obviously, it's not going to apply here in the case that I mentioned, but let's say the seller's a goy. So there's no Bametzra, the seller's a goy. Can he go and grab a deal away from me if he is the Metzrin? And what's the answer going to be? Absolutely yes, right? Why is he allowed to grab the deal away? Because that is a deal that he can't get in any other place. So what's going to actually happen over here? That's going to be like a case of of what? Of Hefka. But according to the Mechaba, Hefka is not allowed. But in this case, even the Mechaba is going to agree.
But according to you, if he has 100 other properties,
right,
it should make a difference.
And a Chanami. That's what the Ramah says on this Mechaba. Yeah, true. I'll give you another example. And again, maybe we're going to have to do a shiur just on this topic, but because really, truthfully, have to define this topic. But the Mashal discusses another case. The Mashal discusses a case in Sim Lamed Vav. A person is about to, is negotiating to purchase an antique watch. Right? A certain, let's say, Patek, you know, Philippe, whatever it's called there. It's worth $300,000-$400,000, this watch, and there is no such other watch that can be acquired. And they're negotiating, and they come to an agreement. They're about to sell it. No? So, l'chayr, everybody should agree, onim hapach b'charara, right? So the Mashal says, no, this case, there won't be onim hapach b'charara. What's the logic of onim hapach b'charara? Why are you going after business that another person's about to get? But if you have a situation where you can't get it somewhere else, so then what happens is that the mekachim emka becomes like Hefka, right? And in this case, it's very likely that anybody can take it. And the Mashal actually says that in this specific case.
So what's considered that I can't find it